Sayasodhanandana Prajajanaranjana Yasodhanandana Prajajanaranjana Tamunatsiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Kishore Kishore Jaya Goranitai Goranitai Goranitai, Jaya Goranitai Jagannatha, Jagannatha Baladeva, Jaya Subhadra Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Gurudev, 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 Jaya Jaya Gurudev. Kishore Kishore Ki Jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Ki Jai, Gornitai Ki Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
So we're continuing the chapter entitled The Dynasty of Bharata. So that's Canto 9, Chapter 21, and the text for today is Text 17, which is on the board so we can chant responsively. Ishvara lambanam chitam Kurvato nanya radhasaham Maya Gunamai Rajan. Svapnavat Pratyaliyata. Ishvara Lamba Namchitam. Kurvato Manya Radhas Saham. Maya Gunamai Rajan. Svapnavat Pratyaliyatam. Ishvara Lamba Namchitam. Kurvato Nanya Radha Saham. Maya Gunamai Rajan. Svapnavat Pratyaliyatam. Ishvara Lambanam Chitam. Kurvato Nanya Radha Saham. Maya Gunamai Rajan. Svapnavat Pratyaliyata. Ishvara Lambanam Chitam. Kurvato Nanya Radha Saham. Maya Gunamai Rajan. Svapnavat Pratyaliyatam. Ishvara Lambanam Chitam. Kurvato Nanya Radha Saham. Maya Gunamai Rajan. Svapnavat Pratyaliyatam. So word for word. Ishvara Alambanam. Ishvara Alambanam. Completely taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Chitam, his consciousness. Kurvataha, fixing. Ananya Radhasaha, for Rantidev, he was undeviating and desired nothing other than to serve the Supreme Lord. Maya, the illusory energy. Gunamayi, consisting of the three modes of material nature. Rajan, O Maharaj Parikshit. Svapnavat, like a dream. Pratyaliyata, merged. So the translation to text 17 by Srila Prabhupada and the purport by Srila Prabhupada. O Maharaj Parikshit, because King Rantidev was a pure devotee, always Krishna conscious and free from all material desires, the Lord's illusory energy, Maya, could not exhibit herself before him. On the contrary, for him, Maya entirely vanished, exactly like a dream. The purport. So, as it is said, Krishna Maya, Sama Maya Haya Antakara, Yahan Krishna Tahan Na Mayara Adhikara. Just as there is no chance that darkness can exist in the sunshine, in a pure Krishna conscious person, there can be no existence of Maya. The Lord himself says in Bhagavad Gita 7:14, Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya durachaya mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. If one wants to be free from the influence of Maya, the illusory energy, one must become Krishna conscious. and always keep Krishna prominent within the core of his heart. In Bhagavad Gita 9:34, the Lord advises that one always think of him. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. In this way, by always thinking, by always being Krishna-minded or Krishna-conscious, one can surpass the influence of Maya. Mayam itam tarantite. Because Rantidev was Krishna-conscious, he was not under the influence of the illusory energy. The word svapnavat is significant in this connection. Because in the material world, the mind is absorbed in materialistic activities. When one is asleep, many contradictory activities appear in one's dreams. When one's awake, however, these activities automatically merge into the mind. Similarly, as long as one is under the influence of the material energy, he makes many plans and schemes. But when one is Krishna conscious, such dreamlike plans automatically disappear. Om Agyanatim Arandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapada Swami Iti Namine Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prasharane Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrindam. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Panchakalpats Rubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. So, well, let's see how I can tackle this one because it's not necessarily fully in my sphere of realization, but let me proceed with it as best I can. So, Srila Prabhupada tells us that the means to remain free from the influence of the illusory energy, Maya, is that one has to keep Krishna always prominent within the core of one's heart. And one has to become Krishna conscious. So that consciousness of Krishna, that state of being aware of one's feelings and of what is happening around one, has to be in relation to Krishna. So it's via service to him that... or a mood of service in devotion to him, that this becomes possible. So this is that Krishna consciousness, that state of being aware of one's feelings, of everything that's happening around one, but it's in relation to Krishna. Now, there's an extraordinary example of perfect acts of devoting oneself in service to Krishna, and just as we're reading here of this particular king, there's a very similar account of Maharaj Ambarish, and there's an entire listing of this particular aspect of performing perfect acts of devoting himself in service to Lord Krishna. So... he was also the emperor of the entire world, and the interesting thing was that in that position, he was considering all his opulence to be very temporary. And the reason he wasn't particularly attached to his opulence, meaning all the luxuriant surroundings, his environment was extremely luxuriant, is that he considered it actually the cause of fall down into conditioned life. So, meaning that awareness of feelings, one's environment in relation to Krishna, it would cease if one shifted one's focus to the luxurious aspect of the environment. So, But he did employ that profusion of wealth that he had and the luxuriant objects at his disposal in a very particular way, and that was in service. So the description that's given, though, is of utilizing his whole body in service to Lord Krishna. So he's described in this way. Maharaj Ambarish always engaged his mind in meditating upon the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, his words in describing the glories of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the Lord's temple, and his ears in hearing the words spoken by Krishna or about Krishna. He engaged his eyes in seeing the deity of Krishna, Krishna's temple, and Krishna's places like Mathura and Vrindavan. He engaged his sense of touch in touching the bodies of the Lord's devotees. He engaged his sense of smell in smelling the fragrance of tulsi leaves offered to the Lord. And he engaged his tongue in tasting the Lord's prasad. He engaged his legs in walking to the holy places and temples of the Lord, his head in bowing down before the Lord, and all his desires in serving the Lord 24 hours a day. Indeed, Maharaj Ambarish never desired anything for his own sense gratification. So this is the description given of him. Engaged all his senses in devotional service in various engagements related to the Lord. And the same verse that's describing Maharaj Ambarish ends with, this is the way to increase attachment for the Lord and be completely free from all material desires. So I read that as a kind of synopsis because we're touching on this point here that King Rantidev was free from material desires. So in a similar way, Maharaj Rantidev is described as being always Krishna conscious. So he was aware of everything happening around him in relation to Krishna. So he was free from desires for material things. We were hearing yesterday that he had no ambition to enjoy material benefits from the demigods because of his attachment to Lord Vishnu Vasudev. That was the previous text. Now, because you know we're dealing with kings and their luxuriant environment, and Krishna consciousness has a lot to do with awareness of one's whole environment, we can make a distinction that between items that are used in the Lord's worship and material property that one intends to use for one's own personal gratification. So this is kind of an important distinction because the way that one is viewing the objects in one's environment has a huge impact on one's whole functioning outlook and the effects that result from that view. So there's Lord Krishna describing the Avanti Brahmana in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the 23rd chapter. And Krishna asks this very pertinent question. This is in relation to being how one's seeing the material objects in one's environment. So Krishna asks this question. What mortal man, having achieved this human life, which is the very gateway to both heaven and liberation, would willingly become attached to that abode of worthlessness, material property? So this is most interesting, because it implies that one is deliberately keeping oneself back from a gateway that's opening, there's a doorway that's permitting one to go into a much higher realm, but by holding onto material property, it's preventing that. So, I'll bring up something that when I was growing up, I had one parent who was very attached to material property, like extremely attached. In fact, material property was constantly being acquired. And I used to think it was a little odd. At the time of, it was my father, at the time of his death, he was so attached to his properties, and there were many of them, that he couldn't even write in his will that he was going to bequeath them to this person, that person. It was very difficult for him. So clearly, you know, that's, you know, from Lord Krishna asking the question, it's such a worthless thing in the end, that kind of attachment to material property, because it's actually ruined the chance to actually either ascend to a heavenly plane or advance in spiritual understanding. So the recommendation of Srila Prabhupada is that one give up all one's material property by utilizing it completely in the devotional service of the Lord. So I have the good fortune that I got bequeathed one property, everything went to my brother, but one property got bequeathed to me, and I had the good fortune that I was able to sell it, and now it's going to be the apartment in, it was a property in Europe, it's going to be an apartment in Evanston that's going to be the abode of my deity. So my father perhaps will get some benefit from that. And this is a recommendation of Srila Prabhupada, that you're actually giving up your property when you utilizing it in service to Lord Krishna. So this is the idea that, you know, deity is installed in that property, or some program is held to propagate Krishna consciousness. So that's the giving up that needs to happen. It's not that one literally discards the property. That's not the idea. So now King Rantidev, he distributed his wealth. And in this narration, actually, he was distributing the wealth to authorized persons. Like, you know, we were reading, you know, he wasn't making a distinction between the persons he was distributing to, but actually it was quite authorized, because he distributed to a brahmana and ordinary living entities. And there's a list that says who one should distribute one's wealth to. And that list goes demigods, sages, forefathers, and ordinary living entities, as well as immediate relatives. and one's in-laws, and even one's own self. So one has to distribute wealth to oneself as well. And in King Rantidev's case, he exemplified magnanimity in his distribution of wealth. I mean, something that would have been very dear, because it's allowing for the maintenance of his body, he even was able to give that. So, in the same way that Maharaj Ambarish always engaged his mind in meditating on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, we find that there's a similar thing that King Rantidev is doing here. It's described that he's attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan, and he was always Krishna conscious. So there has to be a kind of purification that goes on with identifying oneself with one's material possessions. And instead, one has to see those material possessions or their identity in relation with the Supreme Lord. and Srila Prabhupada explains that when one is caught up in kind of learnt patterns of functioning, so my father was caught up in a pattern of acquisition of property, so some sort of learning, then one accepts everything as an object for gratifying one's own senses. And this is, can be contrasted with somebody who's transcended that kind of identification with material objects. That person is accepting everything in relation to the Supreme Lord or in service to the Supreme Lord. So it's quite a different position, and it requires purification because one tends to identify with one's material possessions. So actually Krishna consciousness is a kind of liberated stage for a person, just by virtue of the fact that one is training oneself to see every object in relation to Krishna. So the person who is in that kind of liberated stage, I mean truly liberated, that all material possessions are seen in relation to the Supreme Lord, that person actually has the understanding that the Supreme Lord is reflected in everything. So in the case of Maharaj Ambarish or even Maharaj Rantidev, there's this seen a reflection of the Supreme Lord in one's own senses, body and mind. And when there's that kind of view or understanding that's factually been reached, then one can gauge everything, one's vital energy, one's wealth, one's intelligence, one's words in the service of the Lord. So this is given in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 8th canto in the 27th verse. There's this description of this shift that happens through gradual purification, where it's not even a question like Maharaj Rantidev being willing to sacrifice his vital energy. It was actually natural because one has seen the reflection of the Supreme Lord in everything. So he had his mind completely on the lotus feet of Vasudev. So it's no problem to think of giving up one's vital energy or his wealth. So Krishna gives his thought, so his view of a personality who is in that kind of liberated position, who's viewing his entire environment, all the objects around him, his very own body in relation to Krishna. He gives his thought that somebody who concentrates upon his personal form and who worships him with faith and devotion, he says that such a Krishna conscious person doesn't actually perform any material activities. So the activities then are not of a material level because of the view that's been held. So Krishna describes this, Maya Vesha Mam Yemam, Mano Yemam, Nitya Yukta Upasate, Shradaya Parayo Petast, Teme Yuktatma Mataha. So the translation, the Supreme Personality of God, it said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be the most perfect. So that's Krishna's view of such great personalities who are holding this kind of view of everything in relation to him. So in the case of Maharaj Rantidev, that attachment is described as being factual. So, now it's for this reason that Maya, the Lord's illusory energy, couldn't exhibit herself, because that's what we read in the verse today. She couldn't exhibit herself before Maharaj Rantidev. In fact, she actually vanished entirely. That's the description given, exactly like a dream. And this is because Maharaj Rantidev is free from the influence of the material energy. He's liberated from holding any material ideas. So, you know, this is an interesting thing because it takes so much training to change one's views and the ideas that one holds. You know, because I'm conducting, you know, philosophical discussions with children, I see how long it actually takes to shift ideas. So, you know, every class introduces, you know, a particular prominent idea and it's explored, and I see it actually takes time for a shift to happen, but when you see the shift happen, it's very gratifying. So it's as though every single idea has been changed and it's in the proper position, meaning that there isn't any material idea. So it means that there isn't any idea of exploiting either subtle energy, you know, the one's intelligence or one's mind in some material kind of way. And one isn't forgetting his real spiritual mind, meaning, you know, that focus on the Supreme Lord. And in the same way, one's utilizing one's intelligence to make choices that always remind one of that wanting to do things in relation to the Supreme Lord. So this is the position of not being under the influence of the illusory energy. So it's an ongoing kind of choice thing that one has to make, and that one has to refine ideas and discard old ideas. And it's actually requires a great deal of introspection. And Krishna describes it that those who aren't doing that kind of introspection, who aren't actually trying to change their ideas and see everything, the entire environment, all material objects in relation to Krishna, that actually they're exploiting the resources of the inferior material energy. He sees it as an exploitation. So, you know, it's quite shocking if you actually think that it's been labeled that way, that a person who isn't doing this internal work is actually exploiting. I mean, it's quite shocking. I mean, we, in our, particularly our society that's very industrialized and has a whole lot of other nations producing all kinds of objects that are meant to either make life easier or in fact complicate life, because they all break down and then you've got like huge trash heaps. But that's, you know, you can understand that there's exploitation of resources, but to actually see that everything is divine, even the material things, because it's connected to Krishna and therefore needs to be given the proper regard. And if it's not given proper regard, it's a direct exploitation of Krishna's energy. That's quite offensive, really. So, yeah, Krishna describes that in Bhagavad Gita 7.5. So, for a devotee, one can consider any kind of, you know, material luxury as very insignificant. Whereas for a non-devotee, material luxury is the means for increasing their enslavement to that energy. So, you know, I doubt whether anybody is thinking that getting material objects is an enslavement. I doubt it. But that's the factual thing. And enslavement has to do with that it increases that fire of desire of wanting more. There's the even the practical problem of maintaining what one has. When I lived in New York, I knew several people. You know, the normal thing is that one may have a wardrobe that allows one sufficient items that one can go through a cycle of washing and caring for it and having a fresh set of clothing. I knew people who had like 200 sets of clothing. You know, it's this was common in New York. So in teeny apartments, people were somehow maintaining, 200 sets of clothing. So I would be a little bit amazed. I think, how much variety can you have? But this is a reality. So it's enslavement, because there's also that maintenance. There's the anxiety that goes along with losing those objects. So it doesn't actually allow one space to shift focus correctly to spiritual subject matter. And then there's this further thing that persons are actually forgetting self-realization. And for the devotee, like material luxuriant things are actually a disqualification for spiritual advancement. And for Maharaj Ambarish, I'm connecting King Rantidev here to him because it's kings in a similar kind of position. He'd also achieved this kind of rulership of, it's put as seven islands and inexhaustible, unlimited opulence and the property on earth. So this was actually all under his control. And even though such a position is really obtained, like even we find that the present royalty, so let's say for instance the English royalty, I didn't know this, but actually it belongs to the British Crown Colony, Australia and Canada, and I didn't know this. So, there's still certain parts of the world that belong to a particular royal family, or they oversee it. But in the case of, say, Maharaj Ambarish or King Rantidev, they're actually ruling all those islands in the world. So it's not limited to two extra ones, but every single one of them, and they have complete control of any of the resources of the earth. And, it's said that such a position is really obtained. But these great kings, be it Maharaj Ambarish or King Rantidev, they didn't care for it at all. Like, not at all. Because they knew that all those seven islands, the resources of the world, they're material things. When one doesn't have the factual reality of attachment to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, then everything is dreamlike. And even luxurious environments, they're almost like a dream. One can't hang on to anything without being connected to the source of everything, Lord Krishna and his lotus feet. Everything is sort of amorphous almost. And this is brought up in this verse. It's almost like a dream. It's imagined like in a dream. Because one knows also that all that opulence, luxuriousness, is going to be destroyed. Ultimately, and these kings, they knew that if one actually gets caught up in that luxuriousness of the environment, it's actually increasingly going to drag them down into nature's material mode of darkness, because one forgets self-realization. So this is, I think, the critical point. To look away from, or not get caught up in what is made up, what one's environment is made up of, and what has been given to one, but to constantly remember that relationship with the Supreme Lord. So this may not have been the most dynamic class because there's a little cold, but You know, this is the simple point that emerged from this particular verse. So if there's any thoughts that may enliven this subject matter.
Hare Krishna. Very nice class. I wish I saw the whole thing. But the brief points you made, I have to edit my points, but maybe we could discuss some of the stuff you said afterwards that were very, brought a lot of ideas to my mind. You were mentioning how many clothes or something, wardrobe, how many clothes can somebody have, etc. And that brought to mind one point that I appreciate about the great saints, even Ambarish, who have a lot of clothes, or the great saints who are renounced, is that in the material world, you know, they're very fashionable, but devotees are also very fashionable. In the material world, materialists have fashion on the outside, devotees have fashion on the inside. Yes, yasti bhatya bhagavatiya kenchana sarva guna is tata samaste sudaha. I think this verse, if I'm not mistaken, is from the fifth canto, chapter 18, verse 12, where the verse says, devotees who are engaged in devotional service, unflinching bhakti, they have all the good qualities of the demigods. And in that purport, Prabhupada mentions that he lists the wardrobe of the devotee, the wardrobe, and it concludes qualities like humility and tolerance. And by contrast, we could see that the greats, some people in the scriptures who are apparently renounced from an external point of view, they're actually not renounced, like Durvasamuni or Hiranyakashipu. They perform great austerities, and they were renounced from an external point of view, but they ruined their lives because they didn't have, they weren't dressed for success on the inside. So that's kind of one point up. Brought to mind, but I have a lot more things to say, but I'll edit it, but I'll try to keep this brief as possible. But a lot of times we think that there can't be someone in a modern day, like I can't believe he's here, like Ranti Dave. So I want to kind of glorify a devotee. He maybe not officially in Krishna consciousness, but he just walked in, Nair Prabhu. I want to appreciate some things about that we may have not known. Ned probably was, he was last here 7 years ago, and he did a lot of service for devotees. I'll get to that, but I'll briefly explain the story, and it's very similar to Ranti Dave's. It's a very nice story, and it's praiseworthy. I'm going to try to, you know, briefly mention it here. He was born during World War II in 1937 in Yugoslavia. He moved to France in his 20s, learned French. Then in the late 60s, he moved to Canada and learned English. And then in 72, he came to Chicago. And long story short, I'll try to keep as brief as possible, but it's not worthy of being brief, but he worked very hard. He's a very handy man. He does everything, plumbing, carpentry, so many things. And he wound up moving to Arkansas, Hot Springs, Arkansas. And so, by Krishna's mercy, by his hard work and by destiny, he winded up being blessed by being the owner of a restaurant, a bank, and a hotel. And so he's very successful materially. But come 1997, there was a war in Bosnia. I remember this when happened when I was a kid. And he helped a lot of the people there. He helped them so much that he literally sold all his businesses to help the children in there. He sold his hotel, his bank, and his restaurant, and had nothing for himself. And so a lot of times when people donate to charitable organization like Red Cross, we don't know where the money's gone, but he donated his own money. He actually went over there while it was still a war zone. And he rented with his money a building for refugees and for orphanage children. Over 800 children he helped feed them. And he was very, obviously he was a, there's a quote that says, be happy when God answers your prayers, but be more thankful when God makes you the answer to someone else's prayer. And he was a very blessing to someone. And I can only speak theoretically, like Ranti Dave. If it came to me, I definitely couldn't give up my whole business and my life. And his family members, not his immediate family, his wife and his son still loved him, but he when he sold his building, they were very, let's say, how we react, we'll be upset. I know that's how I react. So, long story, come to the devotee association, Ned Prabhu. He did a lot of service for the Naperville Temple, did plumbing. He did a lot of service here for Chicago Temple. He installed a lot of rooms and bathrooms. You may have seen him the last time he was here was 7 years ago, but I only superficially talked to him, but recently I got a chance to ask him about his life. And so, one property he does have left is a 63,000 square foot, 63,000 square foot building that's three stories tall, and he wants to donate it to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. Why? Because he also did service with Radhanath Swami. While Radhanath Swami was writing his book, he renovated Radhanath Swami's old house that Balaram Prabhu currently owns. He was doing renovation there while Radhanath Swami was writing his book. And he had the opportunity to associate, as you can imagine, with Radhanath Swami. And Radhanath Swami says, yes, you should come to India one day. Basically, I'll hook you up. He didn't say it like that, but that's how I would say it. And so he wants to sell this. He has one property left, a 63, like I said, in Yugoslavia, and he wants to sell it to Radhanath Swami. And I just wanted to say that Bhagavatam, it means the glories of devotees. It doesn't mean, you know, just theoretically speaking or criticizing devotees. It means glorifying and taking opportunities to glorify people who are very inspirational. And that's why I want to take this opportunity. We could die at any moment. And so that's one of the reasons I consider that my unorthodox speaking is very orthodox, because it's meant to glorify devotees and not criticize any devotees. I just want to, on behalf of all the people you help, I can only speak directly. I'm very thankful for all your love and your service, and I'm very blessed to have your association and all the Chicago devotees and all the ISKCON devotees. He also helped in ISKCON, Washington. I'm very thankful for your service, and I'm sure God will bless you. He has blessed you. You've just been a blessing to people, and I'm very thankful for your service, and everyone should have an opportunity to associate with him. So if you have any questions, so you know, you'll be very inspired by his care. So we can only speak theoretically and criticize each other, but if you want to talk to somebody who's a real deal, you should have the opportunity to talk to him. So thank you, Hare Krishna.
Jai Baladev, you took up a long space of time, and I don't know if the devotee feels comfortable that he was publicly praised. But indeed, it's a very nice example that you gave of a person actually giving in charity to persons going through some sort of distress, and that he's even considering to utilize some wealth in direct service to a great devotee who's serving in the Krishna consciousness movement. So thank you. And in terms of your earlier statement of the external wardrobe and pointing to the internal wardrobe, it was a very nice point because indeed the dressing of qualities is actually the visible proof that a person is indeed fixing their mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So those qualities developing is visible proof of Krishna reciprocating with the devotee's sincere effort to utilize everything that they have, their body, their mind, their possessions, their time, their wealth, to serve him. So Krishna is very kind. He does decorate his devotees. So it's rather wonderful when one sees those qualities developing in devotees, because one realizes that, yes, this devotee's been working very hard and has been very sincere and has been very introspective. So it's Yeah, it's wonderful when one starts to see those wonderful qualities in a devotee, then being dressed, as you put it. Thank you, Jai Baladev. So, if there's nothing else, thank you.
One last thing. The only request that Nair Prabhu has is that he did have the opportunity to read Radhana Swami's book. He did renovation, then, you know, by destiny, he took, went away from that situation. And the only request he has is that, does anyone have a Radhana Swami book available that he could borrow or maybe even have? So, so Hare Krishna. So if that's a request, he could be fulfilled. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
There's the microphone needs to come here, Jai Baladev.
Thank you so much, Mataji, for a nice class. I was reading this text even from yesterday. So I got one proof. In this age, everybody is asking evidence and proof for, you know, anything. So, Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivyosha Gunamai Mamamaya Durataya. So, we are, if we say these slokes, this verse, anyone can ask what is the, you know, proof. Lord says that's okay, but what is the proof? So, now we can see, you know, Prabhupada is writing here that even in front of the, you know, the Maya was, Maya Devi was really scared to, you know, execute in front of King Rantideva, because he is such a highly, you know, pure devotee. So she was, and we can see Lord is very merciful upon his devotee. So even Maya is a, you know, external potential of Lord, but even Maya is now scaring to exhibit herself. So now we can think that's a proof of that Gita's verse that Lord says, Daivyosha Gunamai Mamamaya Durataya. Okay? Mamai Vajaya Prabhadante Maya Matan Tarantite. So now he is worshipping, he is doing bhajana of Vasudeva and he is crushed over Maya. You're welcome. So, this is the proof. I like this.
That's a tremendous observation and insight. Thank you very much for sharing that. that was the verse that Srila Prabhupada was mentioning, the difficulty of overcoming material nature and Krishna's divine material energy. So, thank you for making that connection that just by Maya or material energy being afraid to even appear before King Rantideva was the very proof that in fact this verse is accurate, that Lord Krishna has said that you know, his material energy is difficult to overcome, but service to him permits it. So thank you very much, it's a very nice observation. So thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.